Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and the crazy one's just crazy for everyone. You could even be a flaming lib and probably agree with us on this one. But we start with the good, and Jim, like most conservatives, I'm guessing, I did not watch the Thursday night Democratic debate. I mean, debate! In Brooklyn between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, and Fox News put together a fabulous montage of just some of the loud moments in this debate as these two get more and more intense, and here's just a snippet of it.
I am sure a lot of people are very surprised to learn that you supported raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Wait, not accurate. I have stood on the debate stage with Senator Sanders eight prior times.
Excuse me.
I have said the
Secretary,
exact same
Senator,
thing.
Senator, please.
If we can raise it to $15 in New York or Los Angeles
Secretary,
or Seattle,
the viewers,
let's do it.
Secretary Clinton called them out. Oh, my goodness. They must have been really crushed by this. And was that before or after you received huge sums of money by giving speaking engagements behind them?
I did stand up to the banks. I did make it clear that their behavior would not be excused. I'm the only one on this stage who did not vote to deregulate swaps and derivatives as Senator Sanders did.
Ooh, the swaps and derivatives slam. That ends any argument on financial issues. Jim, both of their voices make you want to stick your head in the oven, and it's good to know that there's not only one dysfunctional party in this country.
Greg, vote Republican and save America from loud, angry, yelling old people. This is why, you know, people know my views on Trump. Even Trump might be a quieter America, the Democratic nominee. There's a reason besides the fact that, you know, my eardrums are still ringing and in pain from that. If you're hoping for a Republican victory, this debate underlined the weakness for both of them, besides the fact that it's very hard to listen to either one of them, that Hillary Clinton is extremely cozy with Wall Street. You might say, well, look, you know, we're Republicans, we don't care about that. But look, Hillary Clinton will denounce Wall Street, turn around, ask for money from Wall Street, make an ungodly amount of money from Wall Street, and then turn around and go back to denouncing Wall Street again. You know, she doesn't mean anything she says. All of this is a giant phony populist pose that she turns around and is very clubby with them. And there are those of us who are not so big fans of TARP and the bailouts and things like that, and felt like, wait a minute, we're seeing this increasing intertwining of big business and big government. And that's not actually the free market, that's corporatism. So there's a lot to object to there. And, so Sanders is just pummeling her on this. We'll see if it actually does her much damage in the state that is home to Wall Street and obviously Manhattan. And her counterattack, he doesn't really know what the heck he's talking about. He doesn't know how to make any of his ideas work. He's just going to say, make it happen. And hopefully it will happen. And I think that, you know, it's less likely that Sanders is the Democratic nominee, but pointing out that he doesn't really know how, you know, they asked, like, so where do you get the authority to break up the big banks? And then he really kind of stammered his way through the interview and said, okay, so do you break up? Does the government tell them how to break up? Or do the banks break up on their own? He said, well, the banks break up on their own. We have to break them up because they can't be trusted, but we trust them to break themselves up under terms that are good for everyone. It's really kind of about an inch deep familiarity with how his ideas would work. He clearly hasn't thought through the details, and neither one of them strikes you as a reassuring figure to have in the Oval Office.
Not at all, but it's a fascinating contrast, in addition to their horrific voices, of the person who will do absolutely anything and take any position to win, and the person who really believes their positions, but they're crazy, and they have no idea how to implement them, which...
Yeah, take your pick, America. Good luck, Democrats.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And unfortunately, we still have the same president we had yesterday and for the past 7 years. This is from The Hill newspaper. Health insurance companies are amplifying their warnings about the financial sustainability of the Obamacare marketplaces as they seek approval for premium increases next year. Insurers say they are losing money on their Obamacare plans at a rapid rate, and some have begun to talk about dropping out of the marketplaces altogether. Something has to give, said Larry Levin, an expert on the health law at the Kaiser Family Foundation. Either insurers will drop out or insurers will raise premiums. A report from McKinsey & Company found that in the individual market, which includes the Obamacare marketplaces, insurers lost money in 41 states in 2014 and were only profitable in 9 states. The CEO of Aetna said back in February, "We continue to have serious concerns about the sustainability of the public exchanges." So, Jim, either we get massive premium increases or Obama gets closer to what a lot of people think was his goal all along, was to just crush the private sector and get to a single payer.
On the one hand, Greg, when you hear the health insurance companies saying, oh my God, this is a terrible deal, I do kind of want to laugh. I do kind of want to say, oh, gee, if only someone had warned you that this is not going to be a if only somebody had seen this was all going to turn to you saying, whoa, we can't make money on this. All these people are signing up for poor and sick. And they're old, and all of a sudden they require lots of health care, and all of a sudden the young people are either paying the fine or not signing up in the numbers or things like that. If only somebody had oh, that's right, Marco Rubio did foresee it. And he did say, oh, wait a minute, no bailouts for you guys. We remember this debate back in 2009. We remember this fight leading up. This is what we put enormous amount of fuel to the fire of the Tea Party. For whatever reason, the health insurance companies convinced themselves that no, the Obama administration had their best interests at heart. This was going to turn out to be a great deal for them. It's not working out. However, if you felt like Obamacare was designed to fail and was designed to go badly so that in the end the country would feel no other option but to turn to single payer to cover people, well, all going according to plan then, huh, Greg?
Yes, exactly. This has been exactly what was promised all along. And of course, when it doesn't collapse within 24 hours after these reports come out, the Democrats always say, oh, you guys were all wrong. See, everything's fine. And everything's not fine. On to the crazy martini now. And Jim, this is a good kumbaya moment for the whole country, hopefully.
You said we're uniters, not dividers, Greg.
Yes, exactly. The movies. You love going to the movies. We talk about movies all the time. And even though it's really, really expensive to go now compared to when we were younger, it's still a fun experience. And every once in a while, there's actually a good movie that still comes out. But one theater chain is experimenting with destroying the entire process. And that would be AMC, which is now toying with the idea of allowing texting in theaters. And the idea would probably be that specific screen, so an entire small theaters for specific movies would be reserved for that, while people who don't want texting would not have to deal with that. But here's the most disturbing part in this interview with the new head of AMC. In responding to the question, would appealing to millennials involve allowing texting or cell phone use? And he says, yes. When you tell a 22-year-old to turn off the phone, don't ruin the movie, they hear, please, cut off your left arm above the elbow. You can't tell a 22-year-old to turn off their cell phone. That's not how they live their life. Jim, we did a crazy martini a few weeks ago about millennials who didn't like to eat cereal because it forced them to rinse out the bowl. If you're going to the movies, is it really that much to expect someone to at least silence the phone
and keep it in their, vibrate at
least, it in their pocket for 2 hours? Come on.
Wow, it's like cutting off. No, it's not. And I'm almost tempted to cut off the arm just to show you the difference. You see that excruciating pain and the blood spurting out from your artery at the shoulder? Yeah, that's what a severed arm feels like. It's not like not being able to use your phone for a couple of hours. I was thinking about this, Greg, and I was like, you know, there's a party. Like, I myself have not been to a Rocky Horror show, but I know there's some shows that are meant to be more interactive with the audience. It's okay to be rowdy. You want the audience to applaud. You want the audience to laugh. You're not in church or something like that. So, you know, on the one hand, I'm not always, depending on the film, I don't require need everyone to be behaving perfectly. On the other hand, the fact that, no, you can't. To me, the simplest solution, Greg, is we just need to clone Kevin Williamson. who, if people aren't getting the reference, my friend, colleague at National Review, who covered theater for another publication, was at. It was a play. It was not a movie, but they had said, "Please, you know, silence your cell phones and don't use them during the performance." And this woman gets it out and starts Googling something or looking for something, and he kind of, you know, says, you know, he clears his throat and tries to nudge her, and nothing really happens. And then finally he goes, when they said don't use your cell phones in here, they meant you too. And she just kind of bristles and doesn't do it. Finally, Kevin Williamson grabs the phone and throws it away through a doorway. And it breaks. And the woman talks about pressing charges. No charges were ever pressed. I just think of Kevin Williamson is kind of like Batman, going up against these theater ruffians and ne'er-do-wells and people who want to ruin the show for everyone else. You know, he may not be the hero we want, Greg, but he's the hero we need. So. When I went to an early screening of Star Wars, I went to one of those really fancy theaters, not just with the arena seating, but they serve you food at your seat. It's assigned seats, but they were very strict about the rules regarding cell phones. And they basically said, if we have to speak to you about your cell phone, you're out. We will escort you. We will take you out. No arguments, no appeals. No warnings, you know, and so for obvious reasons, no one touched their cell phone for the entirety of the showing. And obviously, this being, you know, the advanced showing of Star Wars, nobody wanted to get thrown out. It was always like zero tolerance. I was like, okay, get it out of the schools. Stop kicking out kids if their peanut butter sandwich is, you know, shaped like a gun. I'd finally bring it to America's movie theaters where there's a need for some law and order.
Jim, let's hope that the backlash to this, and it is pretty intense, will stop this experiment from advancing any further than this. I will consider
if you had a millennial one. Only showing, that would take it away from the movies we want to see, right? So that may not be so bad.
There would be that upside, but once you
then you're seeing, you know, Jim endorses millennial segregation. You
know? But once you get the foot in the door, you know, it's like it's like every other insidious policy. Then it ultimately affects everyone. So you got to nip it in the bud. Jim, the one good part of this story was that there was an immense backlash on social media and otherwise. And just breaking as we wrap up the podcast here for the end of the week, a tweet and a statement from AMC. Here's the tweet. The statement's much longer. No texting at AMC. Won't happen. You spoke. We listened. Quickly, that idea has been sent to the cutting room floor. So, hallelujah, we can end the crazy martini with a very good twist. Jim, have a wonderful weekend.
Have a good weekend, everyone. See you Monday, Greg.
You too. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.